And in chapter 4, Krishna spoke about transcendental knowledge. Knowledge, jnana. Now, after explaining in chapter 2, what's that? After explaining in chapter 2, one section about jnana, what section was that? In chapter 2. No, the second section is the jnana section. But sthita pragya is the last section, which is also like jnana. But after explaining in chapter 2, one section on jnana, and then encouraging Arjuna to work through buddhi yoga, what section was buddhi yoga?
Fourth.
Arjuna became confused whether he was supposed to pursue jnana or renunciation or buddhi yoga or nishkam kama or working. And he asked in chapter 3, which should he do? And similarly, after hearing all about knowledge, transcendental jnana, in chapter 4, and that one, especially that seeing karma through jnana, explaining seeing action and inaction, and inaction and action, and the whole last section in the conclusion glorifies transcendental knowledge or jnana. Arjuna wonders if jnana is so important. He again wonders if jnana is so glorious, why should I do what you requested, Krishna, in the last verse of the chapter, which was armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. So Arjuna, for our benefit, again, asks a similar question to his question in the beginning of chapter 3. Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all you asked me to renounce work, take up jnana, sannyas karma. Sannyasam karma means the renunciation of karma or work. And then again you recommend work with devotion or nishkam karma. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial, which is better? Prabhupada explains in the purport. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. How to get out of this material entanglement by buddhi yoga or devotional service was also explained therein. In the third chapter, it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duty to perform. And in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work and devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna understands that renunciation and knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? In other words, he thinks that sannyas, or renunciation and knowledge, should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. He appears not to have understood that work in full knowledge is non-reactive and is therefore the same as inaction. He inquires, therefore, whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. Now, Krishna has made Arjuna not understand this point. And of course, we understand it now because we have Prabhupada's purports and we've stressed Krishna's points. But on the battlefield, amidst all the excitement of Krishna's words, Arjuna doesn't understand. But actually, since this whole dialogue is taking place for our benefit, what's going on is that Krishna is making this point, stressing it again and again, so we clearly understand it. The question is, should a person who has acquired knowledge, should he work or not? This is the question. If knowledge is superior to, if sacrifices end in knowledge, once you get knowledge, should you still continue to perform sacrificial work? This is the question. The personality of God had replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. So the question isn't which is better. Excuse me, the question isn't which path is superior, but the question is which is better in the sense of more practical and easier. And why we say that, that is explained in the next verse. One who hates, neither hates nor desires the fruits of his action is known to be always renounced. Such a person, freed from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated, O mighty armed Arjuna. So the term used by Krishna here is nitya sannyas. So the person who is actually renounced and detached from the fruits of his activities, he is actually nitya sannyas. He is always renounced. He is always a sannyasi. So this is the true meaning of sannyas. One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities. Such a person, freed from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated. Almighty Amda Arjuna. Now, that's the first... No, that's not the first section. The first section here, that is 1 to 6. Explains that karma, nishkam karma, is equal to renunciation of work, but it's easier. And this is the point why it's better, because it's easier. Text 4 explains, only the ignorant speak of devotional service or karma yoga as being different from the analytical study of the material world, sankhya, or jnana, or karma sannyas. What does karma sannyas mean? No, karma sannyas. Yes, karma sannyas means renouncing your work. Renouncing work is karma sannyas. So Krishna says here that they, first of all, they are none different. The renunciation of work, excuse me, the renunciation of work and being situated in a renounced situation and analytically studying the material world, because this analytical jnana or sankhya is the work of someone who has no material activity, who has no physical activity, who has taken this type of sannyas. And Krishna explains that karma yoga or work in detachment, only the ignorant speak of that karma yoga or devotional service or work that is detached, that has just been described, as being different from the analytical study of the material world of Sankhya. They are both the same. So the question is, which is easier? And should one who has achieved jnana, should he continue working or not? So Krishna explains that they are the same, but that nishkam karma or karma yoga is better, actually understands things as they are. They're the same, but better. But nishkam karma is better. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service as being different from the analytical study of the material world. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. Now, either in karma, sankhya, karma and sankhya are the same. Excuse me. Sankhya and jnana are the same. They both mean sannyas or renunciation of work. And yoga and karma are the same. They mean work with the senses. So here's that same issue being discussed. Should one renounce work in jnana and attain jnana? Or should one work with detachment? And Krishna's answer is clear. And one point is that one who properly applies himself to any one of the paths will achieve the same result as both paths. The same point is repeated in 5.5. One who knows that the position achieved by means of analytical study can also be attained by karma yoga or devotional service, and therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. They are the same. There's not two paths or two paths for two goals. There's one path, actually, and with one goal. Now the example is how renunciation and work are the same. Or say if I am holding this bead bag in my hand, and I want to pick up the Bhagavad Gita and do some work with the Bhagavad Gita. So I must drop the bead bag, and then after I drop the bead bag, I pick up the Bhagavad Gita and do what I want to do with it. So similarly, if one is attached to the material world, one can't pick up the spiritual world until he drops the material world. So one has to practice renunciation or jnana in a two-step method and drop those things in the material world to pick up and act on the spiritual platform. But it also can be done exactly at the same time by dropping and picking up exactly at the same time. If one picks up, one automatically will drop. So similarly, karma yoga done with detachment allows one to perform the two-step process in one. With material detachment and spiritual attachment. Let me finish the section and then you can ask. Make sure you remember. Purport of 5.5. The real purpose of philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. Since the ultimate goal of life is self-realization, there is no difference between the conclusions reached by the two processes. By Sankhya philosophical research, one comes to the conclusion that a living entity is not part and parcel of the material world, but of the supreme spiritual whole. Consequently, the spirit soul has nothing to do with the material world. His actions must be in some relation with the supreme. When he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is actually in his constitutional position. In the first process, Sankhya, one has to become detached from matter. And in the devotional yoga process, one has to attach himself to the work of Krishna consciousness. For actually, both processes are the same, although superficially one process appears to be involving detachment and the other process appears to involve attachment. Detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna are one and the same. One who can see this sees things as they are. Merely renouncing activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the supreme without delay. So why is Krishna recommending devotional service or karma yoga here? It is because that if one renounces or gives up activity before his heart is clean, then that unclean heart will force him. It will force him. That was the question that Arjuna asked in chapter 2. What is it by which one is engaged in sinful activities even by force? So if one's heart isn't clean, that kama esha, krodha esha, that lust and anger, will force a man to engage in improper activities. So therefore, because the senses aren't engaged when one is practicing either jnana or sankhya. Because the senses aren't engaged, it is very difficult to stop doing improper work. So Krishna's recommendation is to keep the senses always engaged, and better than to purify your heart by work instead of through renunciation. Is that clear? Okay. Now it's also interesting to note that these verses in this section, they are true whether one is practicing to obtain Brahman realization or Paramatma realization or Bhagavan realization. But of course, Prabhupada has translated for the devotees, because that's Krishna's ultimate purpose, to have the devotees engage in achieving Krishna. So Prabhupada has translated everything as devotional service. Now, we've titled that first section 1 to 6 in our easier to memorize sheet. Niskam karma is equal to, but easier than renouncing work. And why? Right. That's actually the point. That your senses are engaged already right from the very beginning. It becomes a two-step process of renouncing, and then later picking up becomes a one-step process. And because the senses are engaged from the very beginning, it's much easier to practice it, because the senses need engagement. If the senses, because the soul is active by nature, the senses practically must be engaged, practically speaking. So it's easier. Easier than the renunciation of work, which is Jnana Yoga or Sankhya Yoga, and they're both commonly known as Karma Sannyas, the renunciation of work. Now, the second section, 7 through 12, describes the performance of Nishkam Karma, how it's actually done, and what are the activities like that. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. So here, after explaining in the last section how one should engage in Nishkam Karma, which is actually Krishna's recommendation in the Bhagavad Gita, one should do one's duty in a detached fashion. So now Krishna's going to describe how to do it here, or what the performance looks like. One works in devotion, he's a pure soul, he controls his mind and senses, he's dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him, and always working, such a man is not entangled. A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. So this is what it's like being involved in Nishkam Karma. And why is he able to do this? Think that he's doing nothing at all is because he has knowledge. He has transcendental knowledge. So he's actually understanding this and seeing this. So it's the knowledge that makes the difference here. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects, and he is aloof from them. So what type of knowledge is being described here? Knowledge that we're not our body. So this is the knowledge that allows him to exist within his material body, but practically have nothing to do with his material body. And therefore, because he sees that his body is acting, but he has nothing to do with it, he is not interested in the fruits of his work, because he is not the body. So that realization allows him to be detached from the fruits of the work. So one should, therefore, in text 10, one should do his duty without attachment. One who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the results to the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful actions as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. So being situated in the knowledge, the jnana, then performing Nishkam Karma or doing one's duty in this detached fashion as described in 8 or 9, text 8 or 9, seeing that everything is going on, but seeing that I am aloof from it, the body is acting, I'm touching, I'm working, I'm moving about, the body is doing all these things, but I, myself, have nothing to do with it. And therefore, in 10, you can perform one's duty without attachment. And therefore, on the highest level, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord. There is no sinful reaction that comes to him. Just as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. So when we have a lotus leaf or a lotus flower, the water is here and the flower appears to be on the water, but actually it has nothing to do with it. Quite artistic, if I do say so myself. It's above it. And also, The lotus actually has a waxy surface. It's above the water, even though it appears to be in it. It's above the water. Also, the lotus has a waxy surface, and any drop of water that is put on the lotus, it immediately glides right off. So similarly, because of the detachment and the transcendental knowledge of the one performing nishkam karma, all reactions, because it is due to his detachment, glide right off of him as a lotus leaf is untouched by water. The yogis, abandoning an attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even the senses, only for the purpose of purification. The steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the results of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. So this is a description of the performance of nishkam karma, and I've entitled for easy remembrance that this section is called the performance of nishkam karma. Now, the next section, what is it on your, oh, I didn't hand out the sheets. No wonder. That's why you didn't.
Is there a whole new book then?
Huh?
Each chapter's in the sheet.
Yeah, you must have been studying astrology. It's a whole new book. Almost. But I'll give it to you. Right now. Why don't you just turn that off for a second? Does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. So he knows this, that he's not the one working. He's not the one making others work. He's completely aloof from this due to his knowledge. Again, purport, about one-third of the way down. The temporary body or material dwelling place which he obtains is the cause... of varieties of activities and their resultant reactions. Living in such a conditional atmosphere, one suffers the results of the activities of the body by identifying himself in ignorance with the body. It is ignorance acquired from time immemorial that is the cause of bodily suffering and distress. As soon as the living entity becomes aloof from the activities of the body, he becomes free from the reactions as well. As long as he is in the city of the body, he appears to be the master of it. But actually, he is neither its proprietor nor controller of its actions and reactions. He is simply in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him, and he has no control over them. His best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. That alone will save him from all turmoil. So, he, the living entity within the body, that is the first doer. He knows he's not the body, but he's in the body. So we say here in this verse that he's not doing anything. He's usually considered the doer. But we say in this verse, he does not induce people to act. He doesn't create activities, nor does he create the fruits of action. It's all happening by the modes of material nature. So that's pushing the blame of all activities for the doership to the modes of material nature, right? But who is actually in control of the modes of material nature? That is the supersoul. So one will naturally think, if I'm not the doer, then who is the one doing everything? That's the supersoul. And therefore, because he's the one doing everything, he's responsible for everything that happens. This is a natural progression of thought. And therefore, Krishna... to relieve himself of people giving him all the responsibility for what happens, speaks verse 15. And this is knowledge of the supersoul. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. So here is the real knowledge that removes the ignorance. That one, we are not our body. Two, that the modes of material nature are controlled by the supersoul. And three, that the supersoul himself isn't responsible He doesn't assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Purport. A living entity, this is just about a third of the way down the page, a living entity is by nature superior, a living entity is by superior nature full of knowledge. Nevertheless, he is prone to be influenced by ignorance due to his limited power. The Lord is omnipotent, but the living entity is not. The Lord is Vibhu, or omniscient, but the living entity is Anu, or atomic. Because he is a living soul, he has the capacity to desire by his free will. Such desire is fulfilled only by the omnipotent desire, by the omnipotent Lord. And so when the living entity is bewildered in his desires, the Lord allows him to fulfill those desires. But the Lord is never responsible for the actions and reactions of the particular situation which may be desired. Being in a bewildered condition, therefore, the embodied soul identifies himself with the circumstantial material body and becomes subjected to the temporary miseries and happinesses of life. The Lord is the constant companion of the living entity as Paramatma, or the supersoul, and therefore he can understand the desires of the individual soul as one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near it. Desire is a subtle form of conditioning for the living entity. The Lord fulfills his desire as he deserves. Man proposes and God disposes. The individual is not therefore omnipotent in fulfilling his desire. The Lord, however, can fulfill all desires, and the Lord, being neutral to everyone, does not interfere with the desires of the minute, independent living entity. However, when one desires Krishna, the Lord takes special care and encourages one to desire in such a way that one can attain him and be eternally happy. So the living entity, although he is not the doer, because of his desiring, he is responsible. And the supersoul, his job or his service to the living entity, his best friend, is to sanction and fulfill the desires of the living entity as the living entity deserves. So even though he's the omnipotent Lord and he is the controller of everything, still he is not responsible because he is neutral and he is just sanctioning. So this is knowledge about the supersoul's position. And this was already explained in the fourth chapter when it described in the second section about applied transcendental knowledge. It has already been described. Actually, then in text 16, after describing the limited freedom of the living entity, he's not free to obtain his desires. He's free to desire, and then the Lord he fulfills the desires. Then in 16, when, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, because the previous verse described how the living entity is covered and thinks himself the doer. This is his covering. His false ego, thinking that I am the one. This is what Maya does. He makes one think, I am the doer. I am the one who is the Ishwara. I am the enjoyer. This is ignorance. And then, when one gets this knowledge, one is enlightened, by which nescience is destroyed, to know that I am not the doer. That Krishna, as the supersoul, is the one who is fulfilling all my desires. I'm not independent. Then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So this is the definition, practically speaking, of the mode of goodness. Goodness. And when one is in this mode, he no longer has ignorance. He has knowledge. He's not attached. He's detached. He knows he's not his body. He's aloof from the body. This is the mode of goodness. But as the mode of goodness, is he liberated? No, because he's in the mode of goodness. So this verse here, 16, describes knowledge, putting it in perspective what knowledge is. And if one has this knowledge and then focuses his consciousness on the supersoul, knowing that the supersoul is the Lord and Master and the bestower of all material effects, and one surrenders to the supersoul, then one gets liberated. So knowledge leads to liberation, but knowledge is different from liberation. Knowledge comes from goodness. Liberation is transcendental to the modes of material nature. A very subtle and fine point. So 16 talks about knowledge. This section describes knowledge. And what I wrote down in my little summary of, even shorter summary of section C, which I called knowledge, the three doers in perspective, that the living entity, doer one, who knows that all bodily activities are automatically carried out by the modes of material nature, that's doer two, thinking the modes of material nature, after those activities are sanctioned by the supersoul, that's doer three, attains enlightenment through knowledge. He sees things as they are. This is knowledge, knowing these three doers in perspective. The conjunction between and the interrelation between the living entity, the modes of material nature, and the supersoul. This is knowledge, and this removes ignorance. Now, 17, liberation. So it's so important, I'll stress this again, that knowledge isn't enough. One has to take shelter of the supersoul to get liberation. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So what happens when he achieves, due to his knowledge of the Supersoul and the impartiality of the Supersoul, he sees that the Supersoul is just sanctioning. So he sees that and he fixes his consciousness on the Supersoul, and he then also becomes impartial. And therefore, because he becomes impartial, the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, that means knowledge of not only the body, but knowledge of the supersoul, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So the brahmana and the cow, what modes of material nature are they in? Goodness. The elephant is considered in the mode of passion, the dog and the dog eater in ignorance. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has done something wonderful in this verse. He says, such a pandit is Samadarshana, and Samadarshana means one who sees with equal vision. But Vishwanath Chakravarti, being a bhakta par excellence, although this is true for Paramatma vision, he brings it up to the platform of Bhagavan realization by saying, Samadarshana means he such a person. He has sama, and he defines sa. What does sa mean in Sanskrit?
This means
he.
With. Thank you. With. And ma is Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. So he sees the darshan. And who is with ma?
Narayan.
So he sees Lakshmi Narayan, or ultimately, for Krishna bhaktis, he sees Radha and Krishna, and he sees the true equality of all living entities. This is a gift of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So on different levels, on all levels, on the Paramatma level it's true, and also on the highest Krishna conscious level. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. Such a person whose mind is fixed on the supersoul, nothing can disturb him. So we've heard of how on the Brahman platform, the Stita Pragya and other chapters that we'll read, how one is fixed on the Brahman platform. But if one is fixed on the supersoul platform, on the Krishna conscious platform, one is also on this equal and this equal and same platform, and he's not disturbed because he sees everything that happens to him as Krishna. Or he sees, if he's on the supersoul platform, he sees that everything, it is the supersoul who is just awarding one thing to one person and another thing to another person, and I'm getting my karma here. It's all the supersoul. So in this way, by fixing one's consciousness on the supersoul or Krishna, One becomes fully calm amidst an ocean of material turbulence. Because one sees everything is just Krishna acting and Krishna's mercy. That's to take tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjanevatma kripavapakam. That everything is just seen as Krishna's award. And one who sees like that, how Krishna is reciprocating in this way with me like that, muktipade sadhayabak, jivatayo muktipade sadhayabak, he becomes eligible for liberation. So this explains the equal platform on the Brahman platform through super soul realization. And this verse 20 is true for both the sadhaka, that means the one practicing, and the siddha. They should act like this. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon attaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered and knows the science of God, is already situated on the platform of transcendence. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, sweetmeat eaters or nectar drinkers have no inclination to eat mud. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses, O son of Kunti. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, so the wise man does not delight in them. Before giving up the this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the forces of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. So one asks the question that here I am, and how long do I have to just tolerate this? Sometimes we view Krishna consciousness that one day we're going to wake up and suddenly we're going to become liberated and Maya will be gone and we won't have to struggle with our minds anymore, the attractions and repulsions. This is a dream, practically speaking. So this verse answers the question, how long must tolerate this? One must tolerate, but how long? And before giving up the material body, till this body falls down dead, we have to tolerate all this. So we might as well learn to tolerate it now and not just surrender to every stupid, foolish, whimsical desire that our mind comes up with. We might as well realize that we're going to be practicing the tolerance of the mind till the body drops down dead. And how is this possible? How is it possible to be so tolerant? By well situated and happy in this world. How is it possible? By fixing one's consciousness on the super soul or Krishna. One can't do it without that. One can't tolerate the pushings and pullings of the mind unless one's consciousness is fixed on the higher Lord, on the Supreme Lord. And then one can be happy in this world if one learns how to do that. So whether one is practicing to do that or one has already achieved it, one should not take pleasure in the sources of miseries. One should not rejoice when achieving something pleasant, nor lament upon obtaining something unpleasant. One has to be self-intelligent. This is text 20 again. Who is unbewildered, and because one has to know the science of God. That is called being fixed up. Now, three more verses in this section and then it's almost over. So one whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme and ultimately he attains the Supreme. So all this description in this section, 17 to 26, describes liberation, which comes again through fixing one's consciousness on the super soul. Just knowledge of that one is not one's body is not enough. Bhakti, knowledge of the Supreme Lord, is needed for all kinds of liberation, even Brahman realization, even super soul realization, and especially, of course, Bhagavan realization. Purport. Unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. This is his secret. He's factually experiencing Krishna, and therefore it's easy for him to tolerate eating mud because he is drinking nectar and eating sweetmeats. So where is his taste for mud? That was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. So this is the secret of Krishna consciousness. And getting out of Maya is one has to get the higher taste of Krishna consciousness. It's urgent. One has to chant and hear and get good association. Otherwise one will not be able to tolerate these urges over a long period of time. This state, Prabhupada explains, he can therefore sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. The state is called Brahma-bhuta, attaining which one is assured of going back to Godhead, back to home. 25. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, those whose minds are engaged within, who are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings, and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. So this sounds easy or difficult? Quite difficult, yes. He will ultimately attain the Supreme beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, minds engaged within, always busy working for the welfare of all, free from all sins, like that. It's not easy. So it's ultimately, it says in 24, you'll achieve it, and it's very difficult in 5. So we all become maybe discouraged, maybe a little bit fired up, but thinking it's going to be a long time. So Krishna kindly speaks 26 and uses the word abhita. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme, abhita, in the very near future. But why then, if it's so difficult in the very near future? This is explained in the purport by Prabhupada, by quoting the verse, darshana dhyayam sam sprashaya matsyakorma vahangama svan apatyani pushnanti tata aham api padmaja. By vision, by meditation, and by touch, only do the fish, the tortoise, and the birds maintain their offspring. Similarly do I, O Padmaji. So the idea is that because Krishna, if we focus our consciousness on Krishna, then Krishna meditates on the devotees. And he carries them, he sees their endeavor, and he carries them to the Supreme, to him, to his lotus feet by his mercy. So it's ultimately we can try and try and try and try, but deviation, gunamai, mamamai, diratya, this material energy is impossible to overcome. It's impossible. Trying to weed out all the anartas in our heart, weed by weed, bit by bit, it seems like an impossible task. But we do work. We work hard at it. But ultimately, because Krishna sees our sincerity, if we are sincere in our hard work, and he sees the ruchi and the ashakti, our taste and attachment for achieving him, and our faith and fixed upness in our spiritual master and in the process, when he sees that, then because he's meditating us upon the bhakta who's sincerely trying, he'll pick us up from the material world. And that's the purport there. And that's why in the very near future, even though it's difficult, we can achieve, the devotee can achieve, if he is sincere. So the whole problem is one of sincerity, actually. So that section described the process of liberation through karma or work in knowledge, But not just knowledge that we're not our body, but knowledge of the Supersoul. Now the next section, two verses, describe how to achieve that same liberated condition through Ashtanga Yoga. Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils and thus controlling the mind, senses, and intelligence. The transcendentalist, aiming at liberation, becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. And then finally, the last verse, which explains, because Arjuna is, he's on the battlefield, and he's looking for peace somehow or another on the battlefield. Krishna explains the peace formula, and this peace formula, and actually the only way to achieve peace, is to be on the platform of liberation by focusing one's consciousness on the Supreme. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Gyatva mam. So here is the knowledge. What has to be known? It's not just we're not our body, but Gyatva mam, who knows me to be these things. That brings the peace, because that brings liberation. So look at these things that Krishna has listed. Bhoktaram, I am the enjoyer of Jaga and Tapa. Because in the third chapter, so much was talked about sacrifice of Jaga. In the fourth chapter, in section, the next to last one, D, right? When it described all the different tapasyas and mystic yogas and the jagas resulted in transcendental knowledge. So, I am an enjoyer of all jaga and tapa. It is me, Krishna says. Bhoktaram, I am that enjoyer. So who is the result? The result of all that is to please Krishna. And then, Sarvaloka Maheshwara. That means the Supreme Lord of all the planets and all the demigods, because you're worshipping the demigods from your jagas. But I am the Lord of the demigods, Sarval, and their planets, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. So it's me who your jagas are directed to, everything that's been discussed in the previous verses. And not only that, but Suridam Savabhutanam. I am the friend, the well-wishing friend of all living entities. And how? In two ways. He's the Lord in the heart, traveling with us at all time, but there's even a more special way that Krishna is Suridam Savabhutanam, the friend and well-wisher of all living entities, and that is through his devotees, confirmed by the Kanshals.
So that's the first verse where Krishna states that he is God.
Huh?
That's the first verse where Krishna is... He reveals that
he... Mom, he uses mom other times, me. But he says that I am this. He's basically talking on the super soul level here, because he, as Suridam Savabhutanam, he's in everyone's heart, and as Jaga Tapa, he's not talking about himself, but ultimately he is talking about himself. So we have to know, Gyatva mom, this is the way to become liberated, knowing Krishna. Not just by knowledge that we're not our body. Focusing one's consciousness like that and surrendering to Krishna within the heart like that liberates one from all the pangs of material miseries. You're all very tolerant. I appreciate it. Hare Krishna.